Reckon the Claymaster was cursing both their names from some hell even now for that interference, and the many that came later. Warbler spat rainwater from his lips. Those of us who make it to the voting table, don't matter how many years separate us, we think so damn similar it's our brains that make us brothers, far more than the brigand and the ink. We're all of us bastards. We become kin. We know each other. From a fresh sworn like culprit, all the way to a coffin dodger like me. Reckon that's true? I reckon so. Then why is it, Oates, that you'd ever think I'd need to seek a pardon from you about that boy? Warbler tried to swallow the anger in his voice, but it was there, an ember he'd tucked between his teeth and cheek, hidden but still burning. Didn't say you needed to, Oates replied, without a measure of contrition. Just thought maybe you were. I didn't demand it, and I don't need it. Go ahead and tell me the reason, since I'm so off the mark. Seems you need to. We're riding toward a battle, Oates. The biggest the lots have seen since before they had the damn name. I don't relish facing that with a mongrel distracted by his anger at the fucking world. I'm not angry, Hog shit! Warbler reined up hard. It was so sudden, Ugfuck was several strides ahead before Oates pulled him to a stop. He turned in the saddle. Warbler's glower was hard and fierce as a hammer blow. You're a thrice blood, Idris. We're born angry. You can try to hide it from the others, deny it to their faces, but you won't with me. Not with me. The orc is thick in our blood, son. It's an ugly, vicious birthright that roars at us to commit ugly, vicious acts. You don't have to embrace it like Nob and the orc stains did, fuck them eternal in all the hells, but telling yourself it ain't there is a lie. You're a fool to tell yourself that lie. You won't make me one by feeding it to me. I know what I've done when the orc wins, what I've become. The same merciless brute as you. The words washed over Oates's wet skin, chilling him to the bone. He suppressed a shiver. No, he didn't. He was quaking. Was Warbler guessing? Or did he know? He'd been a free rider for years. If Sancho had let it slip once, just once, even a rumor would have been enough for Warbler to seek the truth. And there was no chance Sancho would ever have scraped up enough courage to keep from telling the renowned outcast from the Gray Bastards all that he knew. Warbler nudged his hog to cover the gap between them. He regarded Oates for a moment, marking his quivering. Whether he took it for fury or fear, Oates couldn't guess. He wasn't sure himself. Try as I might, I can't think of you as a brother, Warbler said. Thought maybe it was all the years away. But that ain't why. It's because of all the years before, the ones you can't recollect. When I was more to you than I am now. If I hadn't spent all that time with you, with Beryl, down in Winsome, and away from the kiln, I might never have thrown my axe against the Claymaster. And had I not, I would have had more time with you both. I got some of it back, a second chance with her and Dogfall. But not with you. It was another child I raised with your mother. For over a year, Wiley was ours. He called me Wubba. The old thrice's voice hitched. He looked away, baring his teeth in a silent snarl to keep the emotion at bay. Not Warbor, the way you and Issa and Jacko did. Wubba. That's what he'd call out when we were in the Tyne's Medicine Lodge. That's what I'd hear him say when the pain was so bad it had blinded him and he feared I wasn't there anymore. I suffered with him through every ordeal the Tynes put him through, put us through, to get that fucking magic out of him. And when banishment separated me from my hoof and from Beryl for a second time, I nearly put a thrum bolt through my own throat. Didn't matter that it was the rest of you exiled, I was left alone again. Only I wasn't. not entire. I had Wildy to care for, to live for. The elves may have hosted us, but don't think for a moment they helped me beyond their failed attempts with the plague. I've been caring for him, feeding him, bathing him, singing him to sleep. When it comes to that child, I owe you precisely nothing. You won't match your love for him against mine, Idris. Oates held the older Thrice's gaze. His jaw was clamped so tight, his teeth ached. Do you hearken me, boy? The outburst caused Oates to flinch, but it was more from shame than surprise. I hearken, Warbor. And I'm sorry. Don't offer a damn apology. I've tried never to be one that got a stiff cod over others assuaging my wounded pride. I ain't looking to hear pardons any more than I'm willing to speak them. But there is something I needed you to hear. Fetch didn't order me to come. She asked. Just like she asked the sitting young if they would allow me to leave Dogfall. It was the Tyne's choice first. After, it was mine. It fell to me, Idris, the decision to let the plague return fully to Wily. And it was the gravest of my life. Then why choose to let him suffer? Oates asked. Warbler answered without hesitation. Because I knew he'd survive. I was there when the plague was created, Oates. I lived through every foul moment of its conception. And I knew every one of the 9 mongrels that left that cave bearing it into the world. Wily is stronger than any of them. We were waging a losing war, me and him and the elves. I was willing to take the plague, but it wasn't willing to go. Just like when those cursed frail wizards shaped it, that fucking sorcery didn't want me as its vessel. Reckon I'll go to the grave never knowing why the Claymaster and not me. Why Quicklime and Seeper and Thrumlung and all the rest, but not me. Why Wily, but not me. I would have continued to try, hopeless as it was. I would have for his sake. But when the chief sent word that his Spartha was gaining ground and asked for my help, I couldn't continue to languish in Dogfall while other mongrels died. You saw a war you could win, Oates said. If Warbler begrudged him the bitterness, he didn't show it. I saw that it was time to accept what Wily was, what I wasn't. I'm no plague bearer. Hells no, why not? That poor boy is. And you know it too, or else you wouldn't have tried to strike a bargain with the Tyrkanian behind the chief's back. I was trying to save him. And I ain't giving up on that, Warbler declared. But Ulwundulis won't be a place worth living for any mongrel if his Spartha takes it away from us. It's barely a place worth living now. Perhaps not, but it's what we have. What we cut free from the frails, bleeding far more than they during the cutting. I won't ignore the call to fight for it. I made my hard choice. Time you did the same. Oates was flummoxed. Me? I'm here, standing where I always stand. I've seen a mongrel take a dozen steps after his head was cut off, Warbler said. The hells is that supposed to mean? Do you know what happened the day I threw my axe and challenged the Claymaster for the chief's seat? What made me do it? Warbler shook his head. Nothing. I didn't know I was going to do it. Didn't wake with a plan or a purpose. My hand grabbed and my arm flung. Simple. Brainless. A fucking reflex. I can't tell you now what the Claymaster was saying when I did it. What I do know was that I wanted to be with the family I'd created more than the brotherhood I helped found. Reckon I thought I could have both if I was chief, but I can't say for certain. Who knows what the mongrel with no head is thinking when he's stumbling those last steps? But those of us watching him, we can see clear that he's dead, and there's nothing left but reflexes. I'm not about to challenge the chief, Warbler. I might have said the same. I ain't you. No, not yet. You'll be lucky to live as long if you ride into this battle stewing on Wily and that pair of frails you have tucked away at the cradle. And that's why you need to make a choice, son. Them or the hoof. You can't have both. If it's them, so be it. Turn your hog and go south. You'll be branded a craven and a deserter. You'll have to live with the shame, but you'll live. Longer than you will if you enter this battle with your head and heart missing. Oates huffed and shook his head. He couldn't help it. The truest bastard is likely to die at Kalbarka. Hells, Hoodwink's loyalties are more shredded than his hide, and I'd wager he'll survive. If the shit you're selling was true, Mead wouldn't be buried on Badiyat Hill. Creep used to say that wisdom was just words that were well said. Well, right now, Warbler, you're just prattling in the rain. Oates spurred Ugfuck on. He didn't ride south. He rode toward the hoof, toward Kalbarka, and whatever end the battle would bring. Chapter 21. A raucous cheer greeted the big bastard's return to the Smelteds. The voices of the bandits flooded the canyon, rebounded off the surrounding slopes, and filled Oates's ears with a lusty triumph. It sounded as if the hills were made from men, not stone. The outcry was so great, there was little doubt it could be heard down on the plain in Kalbarka. That was good. The chief wanted the garrison to know the bandits had amassed. Let them hear. Let them fear. Trailed by his chosen riders, Oates guided Ugfuck through the wet canyon, urged him through the noise of uncountable throats, most unseen in the gloom of the gathering dusk. One voice managed to cut through the tumult.
"We rejoice to have you among us once more, my friend."
Jacinto stood atop a spill of boulders, arms wide above his head.
"This fucking frail," Malcontent complained to Oates's right.
"Nay," the merry bandit exclaimed, pumping his arms higher and spinning in place to encompass the slopes. "Nearly 3,000 fucking frails!"
Jacinto's tally echoed through the canyon, giving strength to the cheers, even as it was swallowed by their renewed fervor. Oates had to concentrate to keep his jaw from dangling in awe. It was far better than he'd hoped. Jacinto came bounding down the rocks, his bandolier of knives bouncing across his lean frame as he descended to meet them, sure-footed as a goat.
"You in earnest?" Oates asked, as soon as the greasy, smiling face of the bandit stood before him.
3,000.
"At least," Jacinto replied. "It will be more since they are, even now, still arriving."
Oates turned in the saddle to signal Cutwolf and Rabid.
"Go."
The elected mongrels turned their hogs and headed back the way they'd come to deliver the news. Fetch would be relieved. 3,000 men, all eager to sweep down on Kalbarka at her command.
"You and Anvil have been busy," Oates told Jacinto.
The man doffed his soaked hat, the Ugfuck of head coverings, and cut a bow.
"We played a part."
"What'd you do?" Malcontent growled. "Tell this horde of rapers that the garrison has been shitting jewels all winter?"
"There was mention made of plunder, surely, but it was our thrice-blood hero that attracted the greatest share."
Oates smiled with approval.
"Anvil is persuasive."
"She is effective, it is true," Jacinto said. "But it was you that I meant."
"Me? I ain't even been here."
"Not in the Smelteds," the bandit replied, with a strange little smile. "But upon this earth? The tale of your wound taken by the maiden spear spread, one which many who were there to witness said you should not have survived. Yet it is known that the chosen of blessed Magritta fall upon their spears to gain the favor of their goddess. Many here believe she who skewered you upon the heap granted you the life and power of the martyred Madre, for it was you who truly rose from impalement, while the girl was left to molder among the Hisparthan dead."
That's the most fool-ass notion I ever heard, Malcontent blurted.
You ain't wrong, Oates said.
Jacintho shrugged.
And yet here you stand, as do men in their thousands. Is their faith truly misplaced? One mongrel defies the crown and gains the blessings of Bellico. Another declares war, her flesh hardened against harm by elven sorcery. And now you, companion to the others since birth, it is said, transfixed by a killing blow, yet alive to take your vengeance. Is it fools that name you the immortal bastards? Or sages?
Fools, Malcontent replied readily. Jacintho winced and leaned toward Oates.
Even if you agree, it would not be wise to show it. Men that will charge high walls with cannons atop them are a rare breed. Who are we to question their reasons?
Fair point, Oates grunted.
The bandit bowed gratefully as he stepped back.
Now, shall I escort you to the others?
Oates and his 17 riders followed Jacintho deeper into the canyon, accompanied by the continuous elated howls from the silhouettes teeming upon the slopes.
Malcontent kept pace beside Oates.
A portion of me hopes you die in this battle just to prove these lackwits wrong.
Oates let the shard's black jest go unanswered.
Dogging Jacintho's heels, they made their way up the side of a slope, using a switchback trail that was easy on the hogs. Reaching the crest of the hill, they doubled back along the ridge and traveled along the canyon's edge for some time until Jacintho plunged deeper into the smelted's embrace. Soon they surmounted the largest rise in the area and discovered a throng gathered on the broad plateau. Dismounting, they hobbled their hogs before weaving through the crowd of hill men. All were bearded and unkempt, lightly clad in rough-spun tunics and leather breeches, eyes narrowed against the incessant drizzle. Long knives were thrust through their belts, stout spears and hide shields clutched in their hands. The occasional steel buckler, axe, or proper sword denoted the leaders among the bandits. The men gave way for the mongrels, their grim silence a stark contrast to the jubilation of the canyon. Anvil and Thresher stood upon the bluff, gazing down at the city. Barsius and Thune flanked the half-orcs. The halfling was the first to turn at Oates's approach, his smile radiating more menace than the entire bulk of the looming Cyclops.
He is here,
Barsius announced, drawing Thresher's attention, who nudged Anvil in turn. Oates gestured for his mongrels to hold back and walk to the cliff's edge. Anvil's mass of bristle-hard hair, jeweled with trapped droplets, dipped in greeting. No one spoke as Oates took in Kalbarka. The sun was low, nothing but a smear of weak light behind the thick clouds, and served only to stretch the shadows of the smelted mounts over the city. The garrison may have been hungry during the winter, but they hadn't been idle. Even from a distance, the repairs were obvious. The outer wall, once dotted with crumbled cavities, was now an unbroken barrier of old stone and fresh masonry. Many of the buildings inside remained in ruin, but the cliff's vantage provided a clear view of scores of newly tiled roofs. The nearest stretch of wall was Kalbarka's northwest end and hosted no gate, for the smelteds had been a nest for raiders since the days of the Imperium. Any attackers coming down from the hills would be forced to scale the walls.
Reckon we got ladders, Oates said.
About 36 hidden with men below,
Thresher said, waving at the creased land at the foot of the cliff.
Not nearly enough. We didn't expect this many would come.
Neither did the chief, Oates replied, which is the reason the plan doesn't rely on us getting inside.
Jacintho clicked his tongue.
Though if we do,
she won't hate us, Oates admitted.
But she will if we don't do what she does expect, which is give the frails a heap of distraction.
Wait, Anvil said. The light is gone. We need a torch over here, Thresher called.
A mongrel arrived at a run. It was Caltrop,
his branded forehead dipping slightly when he saw Oates. This thin, subservient rider was the last of the thrice freed, spared the massacre at their stronghold only because he'd remained in the Smelteds to represent his hoof. Now he held a torch to illuminate Oates's lips, so Anvil could see what was said. Oates pointed down to where the Guadalquivir flowed to meet Kalbarka's southwestern end. Our fleet will attack first. That'll leave the Frails with a choice, to counter with their own ships or try to use the cannons atop the harbor towers to sink us first. With the sky continuing to piss, Warbler reckons they won't trust in their powder. That leaves their big ship, the Drahman, and whatever galleys they have left. Jackal and the Chief will deal with the Drahman while the White Wrists tackle the rest. No matter what the Frails do, our fleet will sling sapper pots at the towers above the harbor. When we see them burning green, that's our signal. We hit the walls with all we've got.
Thankfully, that's a pile, Thresher said.
Oates looked to the sky. What little light remained outlined the unrelenting clog of storm clouds. This rain looks to linger a while. If it gets any stronger, we may be spared the worst of the cannons. But we'll still be charging into a storm of thrumbolts, spears, and whatever else the Frails decide to throw over that wall to kill us. Whatever it is, we can't falter. We need the Frails' attention on us, so it's not on the other side of the city. Oates lifted an arm and chopped it over the middle of Kalbarka. They got strong defenses at the main gate, plus the river. The bridge narrows the approach and stalls any charge. Likely they won't expect a run on it. And the hoofs would be fools to try. Unless the gates are open. Every eye followed Oates's gaze down to Barsius. The halfling scratched his nose with a knuckle.
So long as enough of their numbers have been drawn away, the gates will be open. We will see to it.
We?
Thresh asked, the scars on her face knitting tighter as she frowned.
Yes, Barsius replied. I will be leading the effort myself.
Jacintho cocked a dubious eye at Kalbarka.
Then I suggest you hasten away. That is a long way to go on short legs. There is time yet. The distance you perceive is not so great to my eye, thanks be to great Bellico.
Jacintho loosed a mocking laugh.
And that means what?
It meant that Barsius carried some relic of his god, just as Jackal did. Oates had long suspected it. Zerko wouldn't have tasked just any hunter with finding Jreka, no matter how loyal or faithful. It would need to be someone capable of standing against her, against the voice of Bellico, should she resist. And she would resist. For all his skill and cunning, Barsius was far more than a skilled tunnel fighter and born killer. Whatever his god-granted gifts, they'd served well in the past. Tonight's attack could only benefit from his involvement.
Means he knows his job and will get it done, Oates said. When the gates are open, Warbler and the Hoofs will charge from the plain. Once a few hundred mounted mongrels are inside the walls, the garrison will have a difficult time putting up an organized defense.
A bastard of a time, Jacintho declared, beaming.
Thresher made a disgusted noise.
With pressure from us and from the harbor, Oates went on, the Frails will be hard-pressed from multiple points without and within. Warbler says panic will do the rest. But until then, we strive for the walls. Understand?
Firm nods answered him.
Spread the word, Anvil told Thresher and Jacintho. When the harbor towers burn, we go. Oates, we should speak.
Taking the hint, Caltrop handed the torch to Oates and fell into step behind Thresher.
I will away too, Barsius
said, resting a hand on the pommel of his ancient sword.
Luck to you, big bastard.
And you.
As the small warrior in threadbare robes moved across the crowded plateau, every man and mongrel stepped out of his path.
Can others hear my voice? Anvil
asked, when only she, Oates, and Thune remained at the bluff. Oates looked around. None were within earshot. No.
Tell me if I grow too loud.
Oates agreed with a nod.
You know what the hillmen believe about you?
Oates gave a rueful laugh and shook his head. Pile of hog shit. Anvil's broad face grew grave.
You saw the maiden spear die. We all saw her fight on. That was no trick.
No, but it don't mean I'm like her just because she ran me through. I ain't no goddess's chosen, Incas. Been weak as a runt. I didn't die and come back. I just didn't die at all, though it was only by a cunt hair.
Anvil turned to Thune and spoke a string of words in a strange tongue. Oates didn't understand a lick of Isbardoric, but he wagered he knew a question when he heard one. The Cyclops regarded Anvil for a moment before fixing his lone, somber eye on Oates. Curtained by long, matted, rusty locks and lidded by a heavy brow, Thune's eye should have been nestled in shadow, yet it seemed brighter than the torch in Oates's hand. He'd never considered the giant to be witless, but neither had Thune ever displayed a stare of such incisive intelligence. Oates had to fight an urge to strike out at the Cyclops to blind that piercing, limpid orb. Thune blinked, and the aggression fled Oates with a speed that left him lightheaded. When the eye opened again, it was dull with shame and embedded in a face full of remorse. Thune hung his head as his deep voice uttered something brief and sheepish. Anvil turned back to Oates.
He asks you to forgive him.
I ain't even certain what it is he did to me.
Some Itinians can see secrets,
Anvil said.
A sudden panic seized Oates. Secrets?
The language we share is not native to either of us, so I may have it wrong, but Thune can see what is hidden. He says it must be powerful. I think it has to be sorceress.
Like magic? Oates said, breathing a little easier. There was nothing mystical about what he'd done to Lucan. That act had been simple, evil vengeance.
I think so.
And he saw some? In me? Anvil glanced back at the Cyclops, still slumped and refusing to look at either of them.
He cannot tell you unless you forgive him. It is the way of his kind. I think it is part of the reason he was banished.
Oates wasn't certain he wanted to know, being earnest. But he couldn't leave Thune so crestfallen. Seemed cruel, even if Oates hadn't asked him to work any damned hoodoo in the first place. I forgive him. Thune, look at me. You've got my pardon.
Anvil translated, and the giant raised his head to show a face resolved, if not wholly relieved. Thune spoke, though his words remained short.
Well? Oates prodded.
He says he saw...
Anvil faltered. Her toneless voice rarely betrayed emotion, but she sounded disturbed.
A festering wound where your heart should be.
Oates raised a hand to the scar beneath his brigand. It often ached, but beneath the pain was the throb of his heartbeat.
Spear missed my blood pumper, Anvil. The Zahrasine healer that looked after me would have noticed if it were elsewise. She knew her craft, believe me. I don't know what Thune sees or why, but...
Oates huffed, frustrated. He forced himself not to cast an aggravated arm in the direction of the men on the plateau.
They can believe what they want. I can even understand it, queer as that sounds. But they're just lumping me in with Jack and Fetch, seeing miracles everywhere. Hells, I wish it were true. But I'm just me, stronger than some, I reckon, even after nearly going to the dust. Bellico, Magritta, the Tynes, none of them put any magic in me. I'm a thrice-blood and a bastard, same as you. Nothing more. Likely a pinch less, if I'm earnest.
Anvil frowned, considering. At last, her shaggy head bobbed in a slow nod.
Perhaps, but...
But it don't do no good to tell these men. I know.
Jacinto said. And he's right. You're right, both of you. I won't dispute it where they can hear.
It would be better if their belief is true. I hope it is. Because if the chief wants these men to charge those walls, you're going to have to lead them. We risk most of them deserting if you do not.
Oates rubbed the water from his beard to hide his grimace. Below, Kalbarka's sprawl was a hulking darkness, barely discernible through the haze of rain, distance, and nightfall. The chief had known his presence at this prong of the attack would be important. He and Anvil had lived with these men, well, a number of them, all winter. It served to reason he would help lead them again, give their courage a boost, but none had counted on Oates being received as some fucking folk hero. If that's what it takes, he said, at last, then that's what I'll do.
We all will, Anvil replied.
No, you have other orders. They were his orders, too, but there was nothing for that now. He had a different task, thanks to these fool-ass frails and their fool-ass notions. Kalbarka is hosting a whole mess of cavaleros. Warbler suspects they'll ride out against the bandits, especially if it looks like they're about to break. Cavaleros love to ride poorly armed men down. Sally forth and all that shit. There's no gate here, but there is on the north end this side of the river, where we don't have a presence. A good spot for the frails to send a sortie out. The attack on the walls is going to be a rough task, even with 3,000 men. If it goes wrong and the men start to fray, then a charge from a bunch of cavalry will spell the end. Warbler fears a rout. It'll be up to you and the riders here to make sure that doesn't happen. You'll need to watch that north gate, out of range of the guns. If the cavaleros come out, you tusk fuck them into the grave.
If it doesn't go wrong, I'll be sat back in safety with nothing to do.
Oates almost said he was envious, but that wouldn't help. He almost offered to trade positions with her, but that would be worse. Truth was, he'd been both relieved and offended when the chief had given those same orders to him. Right now, Anvil was questioning her usefulness and wondering why she hadn't earned a greater part in what was to come. At the same moment, she was realizing that her chances of surviving the night had just increased by 100-fold. Being tugged in opposite directions made a mongrel question their grit at a time when they needed more sand than all of Ulwandulas. Oates leaned forward so Anvil would see he was about to speak. During your prize fighter days, you ever have an opponent refuse to fight because they were too scared of you?
Yes.
What happened then?
My masters would call to the crowd, see if any were brave enough to enter the arena. They would increase the prize coin and allow 3, 4, even 5 men to fight me at once. But there had to be a fight.
There always does, Oates said. And it's often bigger than the one you managed to avoid. I know you'll keep those frails on foals off me, Anvil, even if it's just because they're too damn craven to face you. Hunkered in a muddy ditch, staring at the black barrier of Kalbarka's wall, it was impossible for Oates to fathom not dying. He'd once scaled the exterior of the kiln, and never felt the certainty of death he did now. But Jackal had been with him then. Now he was surrounded by nameless men. They existed as a disturbance of coughs, sniffs, hushed voices, and vague movement. Several of the nearest had made the swinging cock proclamations of scared men trying to sound hard when Oates scrambled into the ditch beside them. What they said and what Oates heard were vastly different.
Cunts on the wall are going to shit themselves when we come running.
I'm going to lag behind and fill my britches when the order comes to charge.
We'll be over the parapets so fast they won't have a chance for a single volley.
Be lucky if half of us make it to the wall.
City will break as quick and bloody as a virgin, big bastard.
A Thrumbolt is going to kill me in my face. 3,000 men. Not all would be braggarts or cowards. Many were silent and steel-eyed, focused.
There'd be tight-knit bands among the Horde, men who had fought and raided together, saved each other, trusted each other. They would act with a singular instinct, drawing courage from all the violence they'd shared and survived. Some would gain another story of death defied after this night. For others, the charge on this wall would bring the end. All it took, even for the toughest brotherhood, was that one man to go down, the one you all thought the Hells would never claim. But then he catches a bolt in the eye, a spear in the neck, a sword in the gut, and that glorious, invincible son of a cunt you would follow anywhere without fear is made into a gory corpse. It can take the legs out of his companions, and they all start dropping. Oates didn't have anyone here he trusted. The rest of the mongrels were with Anvil and Thresh, somewhere far out of sight, sitting their hogs. Ugfuck had been left up in the hills. No need to risk him on this charge. Oates would reach the wall on his own feet, same as the rest, or not at all. 3,000 men. They were spread along the flats, using what cover there was. Boulder snarls, clumps of gorse, dry creek beds, tiny copses of lemon trees. Oates's ditch was the forwardmost nest, roughly in the center. He could feel the army he was to lead stretching out behind him, all the way back to the foothills. Jacintho was back there somewhere, tucked up on a ridge on their southern flank, where his keen eyes would be fixed on the harbor towers, waiting to blow the signal horn and send this blood-hungry tide to war. Likely there wasn't a tenth of their number on the walls to oppose them. But Oates had seen what determined fighters defending a prepared position can do. He'd been on the other side of it upon the heap. He and his mongrels had thrown back many times their numbers, made the frails pay for every step up the slope. They'd made corpses by the score, and they hadn't had cannons. No. Try as he might, he couldn't imagine not dying tonight. Worst part was that he was the glorious, invincible son of a cunt in the eyes of these men. What would happen when Malcontent got his wish? When a gunstone took Oates's head off, showed the bandits how wrong they were, what then? Maybe they'd keep going. Maybe the attack would have enough weight to carry them through. Surely 3,000 men didn't need one thrice blood to get this task done. Surely not. The night stretched on, the weight growing into a living, gnawing insect. And the invisible fucker had laid eggs, birthed a swarm of other little invisible fuckers to crawl beneath the skin, chew at the mind. That tickle was more vexing than the spitting rain. Oates wagered it was well past midnight, but he couldn't be sure. The moon hid behind a wall of clouds thicker than the stone one a few thrum shots ahead. The men grew impatient, boredom causing several nearby to abandon whispering. Little pockets of palaver began sprouting up along the ditch. Laughter wasn't far behind. That was the cowards again, using their tongues to distract them from their heads. Oates grit his teeth. It was an annoyance, but there was no cause to stop it. The men in Kalbarka knew they were here. Every last frail manning the wall could have been blind and still not miss the bandits coming down from the hills. They would have seen the sea of raiders, the spears, the ladders. Hard to imagine such a sight wouldn't have made them nervous. That proved true when the first man wandered from the ditch to take a piss, provoking a cannon shot from the wall. The gun thundered, shattering the complacency of the long night. Men all around expelled curses and cries of alarm as they fell on one another to duck lower into the ditch, which suddenly seemed scant protection for the mountain of meats Oates called a body. He didn't duck, because there seemed little point. Still, his spine nearly leapt out of his throat at the blast, and made a second attempt the next heartbeat when the ball impacted with the ground. The burst of mud went up more than a stone's throw from the ditch and far to the left of where Oates stood, but he felt the impact, couldn't help but flinch. The man standing with his cod in his hand either had a buzzard's brains or a hog's balls, because he hadn't moved. Oates's orc blood allowed him to clearly see the spectacle, but only the men nearest the pisser were able to witness his brazen feat in the dark. A laughing cheer went up, quickly building into abuses shouted at the wall as the story spread along the ditch. The garrison had been spooked by one man brandishing his cock. Oates didn't share their amusement. The shot proved the garrison was on edge, but it also proved they had managed to keep their powder dry. There was no time to worry. Off to his right, Oates saw a green glow infuse the belly of the clouds above the city. The harbor towers were ablaze. The next instant, the signal horn blared. Oates climbed out of the trench, relieved to escape the press and the wet. He turned his back on the wall, drawing himself to his full height as he faced the men. It was rare that he relished the orc in his veins, but if anything would survive this night, it was a thick. Oates buried what little human was within him and let the beast loose from his lungs.
To the walls! Kill until you fucking die! And may the hells take the hindmost!
The cheers he'd received in the canyon were nothing next to the ravenous roar that erupted from the plain. The bandits surged from the ditch, baying for blood. The surrounding land birthed a swarm of screaming men. The guns responded, their reports throwing feeble punches into the wave of war cries. They were discharged too soon. Oates didn't need to turn to know the gunstones fell short, pocking the ground the bandits had not yet reached. He continued to stand, urging the men on with a bellow as they rushed by in a seething current. Oates waited for the right moment, feeling the rhythm of their charge in his gut. Only when their boiling core washed over him did he turn, joining the howling mob. He allowed his legs mastery, muscles pumping, boots pounding faster than his heart. His long stride overtook several heaving layers of men and brought him closer to the fore of the onslaught. The wall was the entirety of his shaking vision. Stockbow bolts cut through the rain, whistling as they fell, many ending their path with a slapping thud. Men cried out, fell. Oates jumped a tumbling body, ran on. The thrum volleys wouldn't be the worst of it unless he hurried. Yelling at the top of his voice, he sprinted through the rain. Hells, the wall was no closer. No, it was. He could see the shapes of men at the top now, see the frames of the shelters built over the guns. Shit. The timber and canvas caves belched smoke and fury. The blast put a hiccup in Oates's stride. His body screamed at him to drop. His mind said to halt was to die. The disagreement tripped him up. He fought the stumble, regained his balance. The gunstones pummeled the ground. He felt them in his boots and bones. Ahead, the earth erupted. Oates saw the leaden ball bounce, come hurtling toward him, slow enough to see, yet too fast to dodge. It missed his legs by a frail's cock. Others behind him weren't so lucky. He heard high-pitched screams as the ball chewed through the throng, one of a dozen making a meal of the bandits. Oates charged through a shower of sizzling earth, broke through a plume of smoke. The ground beyond was churned and blistered, littered with shattered bodies. But there remained scores of survivors still charging the wall. These were the swiftest men, the front of the line. Thousands more were following. Oates, and Hells knew how many hundreds more, would reach the walls before the cannons could fire another volley. The swell of relief lasted less than a pair of steps, the time it took for half the men in front of him to be cut down by thrum bolts. The bandits had their shields raised, but the hard-cured hide was scant protection against the stockbows wielded by the garrison. They would be heavy affairs, the frails needing a crank to reload them. Slow, but powerful. Oates unslung his own thrum on the run. It was just as heavy, but he didn't need a fucking crank. He loaded without slowing, loosed at the battlements. Again, and again. He was a lone mongrel, slinging single bolts, but maybe it would keep one man's head down. The man who might kill him. He reached the wall. Alive. Joining about 36 equally fortunate fucks at Kalbarka's stony breast, Oates sucked in air, head craned to watch for defenders. Oddly, nothing tried to kill them. They were too close for the cannons to be a danger, but nothing prevented the stockbowmen from leaning over the parapet. Yet the flying bolts, like the cannon fire, were all going over their heads. Looking down at the pocket of men, all wide-eyed and sweating, Oates realized why they were being ignored. They didn't have a ladder. There was no threat in a gaggle of fleet-footed fools stranded at the base of the wall with nowhere to go. Oates whirled to face the plane, just in time to catch a man barreling into him. There was no spear in his hand, no shield. All he carried was a trio of thrum bolts lodged in his torso. The bandit looked up at Oates, his smile leaking blood.
"Made it,"
he said, and died. A wave of bodies struck, forcing Oates to dump the dead man and brace against the heedless press. He was a big mongrel, tall and strong and heavy, yet a sudden panic seized him as the men piled in, the weight of their numbers growing by the instant. The first arrivals were in danger of being crushed against the wall. A man nearby lost his footing and went down. Oates saw him swallowed by the swelling morass of besiegers. He should have been heartened by the mass reaching the city, but the army of bandits wasn't overwhelming the wall. They were trampling one another. Oates pushed back, shouldering at shields and backs, making space for himself, demanding it with shouted words and curses he could barely hear over the roar of the living surf. Movement caught his eye farther down the wall. A ladder going up. Oates twisted to look the other way. Two more, rising in stiff, stuttering arcs. The nearest was the first.
"There!"
Oates cried out, wrestling an arm out of the swamp of limbs to point over men's heads. He began shoving his way forward, fighting a constant pressure toward the wall. A man worked his way to Oates's left, stiffened his body behind his shield to act as a bulwark. Another joined them, then another. Soon, Oates was surrounded by an escort, using their shields, elbows, and voices to cut him a path. There were always good men, those who kept their heads, saw what had to be done, and acted. They seemed to be drawn to Oates as he moved. He kept his eyes on the ladder. The closer they got, the thicker the resistance from the defenders. Thrum bolts and stones fell upon the men teeming there. The bandits fought back, forming a shield wall and casting their spears at the parapet, trying to buy the climbers time, but none reached the top. Even as Oates watched, the ladder was pushed away from the wall, thrust back by a forked pike to fall among the attackers.
"Let's move,"
Oates told his guards, and they redoubled their efforts, plowing forward. A bolt took one of his boys through the skull. Boneless, he dropped. The rest tightened up and kept moving. By the time they reached the fallen ladder, they no longer had to push at living bodies in front of them. It was the dead ones under their feet that were the thickest impediment. For all the slain, there remained a staunch knot of bandits holding out against the withering flights from the wall. They were already wrestling the ladder back into the air. Oates and his boys joined them, seizing the rungs to hoist it higher. Drawn by the big bastard's presence, men ran in from all directions to help. The top of the ladder clacked against the wall, and a brazen bandit immediately began to clamber up. Oates swiftly loaded his stock bow and snatched it to his shoulder. He waited for the defender with the pronged pike to show himself. A cheer went up from the bandits when Oates shot him in the chest. Hurled spears followed his bolts, most falling short or clattering uselessly against the battlements, but it suppressed the garrison enough for the first man on the ladder to reach the top. A halberd thrust to the face ended his progress. He fell, but another was behind him, and another. The bandits formed an unbroken line, nose to ass, each driven by a mixture of courage and delusion, each believing that he would be the man to gain the wall, the man that would force a hole in the garrison, allowing the rest to follow. Because it took only one. That was the queer truth. A high wall bristling with weapons seemed unconquerable until one man proved it wasn't. That man could rip the heart out of the defenders and grant it to the besiegers. One man. Or one mongrel. Oates spent his last bolt and stepped to the ladder. As soon as his boot touched the first rung, he felt the surrounding bandits fight with renewed fervor. He didn't bother to draw his tulwar. Climbing quickly would serve him better than steel in his hand. He'd worry about how to kill the fuckers who stood in his way when he reached the top. If he reached the top. There were 8 men climbing in front of him, connected by the precarious slant of the ladder, which seemed suddenly fragile and monstrously long. Odd, but it was the 3rd man from the top to fall first. Oates didn't even see what struck him. He just cried out and twisted, knocking the man directly behind him off the ladder as he plummeted. The other bandits hunched and hugged tight to the rungs. Oates was still on the ground, giving him a clear view of the 2 stricken men landing in the muck, one with a bolt in his ribs. The other's fall was broken by the carpet of corpses. He scrambled to his feet, snatched up a spear, and hustled to stand behind Oates, taking his place in the line once more.
"They won't stop me twice, big bastard!" he proclaimed.
"Mad fucking hero," Oates replied. "A 12 like you and we'll get this done."
There was no time for further words. The men in front of Oates had climbed to fill the gaps. There was nothing for it but to follow, quick as he could. For a moment, he feared his weight would snap the ladder. Feared and hoped. Yet it held. He was more than halfway up when the line stalled, leaving him suspended in the strange space between the twin hells of the bloody ground and the gnashing wall. He snatched a look in both directions and saw 1 other ladder far to his right, loaded with a stream of grit-filled fools. His line's delay was caused by the topmost man nearly punching through. He fought for all he was worth, doing messy work with a broken spear, 1 foot on the wall. The angle didn't allow Oates to see what stove the man's head in, but his valiant effort ended with a final gift. He fell forward instead of back, and must have tangled up the defenders with his corpse, for the bandit behind him went over the wall without resistance. Oates kept climbing, watching as a 2nd man went over, and a 3rd. That was it. That was what they needed. 1 bandit was all that separated Oates from the top. He and 4 men could hold the gap until more arrived. The ladder was full behind him, the stream that would overrun the defenses. They would fight their way down the walk to the other ladder and any others beyond. Fetch had asked for a distraction, but the hillmen were on the verge of taking half the city. The bandit in front of Oates stiffened and froze.
"Almost there," Oates said, butting the man with his forehead.
All he had to do was haul himself over. His fellows were holding firm, maintaining an island of safety at the head of the ladder. But the man remained motionless, staring at something above him. Not the wall, he was level with that. Oates followed his gaze skyward, and his bowels turned to putrid ice. He couldn't have said when the rain stopped. He didn't know when the break in the clouds appeared. Yet there it was, framing the bright, full face of the moon. A moon that should have been pale and new.
"The betrayer!"
It was the man behind Oates who said it, the crazy fuck who fell off the ladder and came back eager for a 2nd attempt. His voice was wavering now, thin and childlike. Oates tried to convince himself it wasn't, that he'd been mistaken about the phase. But no, it was a new moon tonight. Warbler and Fetch had been adamant the lack of light would aid their siege. The cursed thing had waxed without warning, without their knowledge, while it skulked behind the clouds. Never had the fucking betrayer so earned its name.
"Forget it!" Oates yelled. "We have the wall! Go!"
He pulled himself higher, pressing against the man before him, trying to bully him the last measure. He wouldn't budge.
"It's a bad omen," he whispered. "The centaurs, they'll..."
Oates wouldn't have heard, but he was nearly cheek to cheek with the stricken man. And so it was almost his head that got pulped when the soldier appeared before them swinging a mace. The iron flanges squelched into the bandit's skull. The brained man lurched, fell back on Oates. He tried to take the weight of the convulsing carcass, but the fucker with the mace kept swinging, bashing the shield of dead meat. Grunting, Oates snatched at the edge of the wall and caught firm. If he could just pull himself forward. Metal rang against stone, and the blinding pain in Oates's fingers shot up his arm, stole his breath. The ladder flipped. Oates hit the ground before he knew he was falling. Men were sprawled beneath him, at least one atop him. The fingers of his left hand were on fire. He kicked himself free of the tangle, forced himself to look. His middle finger was gone past the first knuckle. The tip of his third was a mess of bloody, flattened gristle. Spit flew from between Oates's lips as he growled through teeth clenched with pain. Near him, a dazed bandit with a gashed head tried to rise. A falling rock smote the poor man between the shoulder blades, broke his back. He died gurgling, face down in the carnage. Oates rose, taking up a fallen shield with his good hand, cradling the other to his chest. All around, his men were coming apart. They were shouting, pointing at the moon, many already in flight.
"No!"
Oates yelled, throat thick with the mucus born from pain. He darted in the path of several routing bandits, throwing his shield forward to shove them back.
"Turn! We've men on the walls!"
They scattered away from him and kept running. Every man who fled dragged a half dozen more in his wake. It was hopeless. The bandits were broken. The bolts fell with renewed vigor, feathering men in the back. One came for Oates, penetrated the top of his shield, and struck his bicep. It was a shallow wound. The next wouldn't be. He had no choice. Oates joined the retreat. Again he ran, but his legs were stubborn mules, refusing to move at the pace he desired, no matter how hard he goaded them. Bolts shrieked by on both sides, cutting men down in droves. Oates knew one would soon take him in the back, and the certainty made him scream with fear and shame and outrage. It was the guns that got him. He didn't hear them discharge, just the blast as the balls struck. A hammer the size of the world launched him off his feet. He flew, carried by a wave of dirt and sound and broken men. The noise buried his ears, the dirt and men buried his body. Tears streaming, Oates blinked against the charred grit. He couldn't move his legs. Had they been... Fuck, he was too afraid to look. No, they were there, pinned. He felt them now, beneath an uneven pressure. Dead men. Oates flipped to his belly, gathered himself to crawl free. He heard the fleeing men coming, saw them, tried to cry out, but he choked on the smoke. A panicked foot kicked him in the head. His eyes flashed as more feet stomped him deeper into the mud, closer to death. His vision cleared to see Kalbarka, the wall. Oates hadn't gotten far. He could still see the triumphant gestures of the garrison, their upraised, pumping arms. He could still see the gun shelters. One in particular drew his attention. Oates shivered, knowing it was the one that would kill him. Staring, bleary-eyed and beaten, he was seized with the same cold sensation he got when he knew there was a snake hidden in the straw of the stables. He could always feel it looking at him, waiting to strike if he got too close. Up on the wall, beneath that shelter, men were reloading their cannon. He wondered if they could see him, if they knew, like he did, that their next shot was going to tear him in half. Oates saw the smoke punch out, heard the weighty pop. A massive figure landed an arm's length from Oates's face. He heard a smacking impact and a throaty grunt as the figure doubled over, skidding closer toward him on bare, wide-set feet. Oates knew that cliff face of a back, those piercings of bone. The figure turned to look down at him, a steaming cannonball held tight to its belly in both massive hands. Death had just been denied by ruin.
Chapter 22. The chief's twin had another name, some guttural, growly title in Orcish Oates had heard once, but would be hard-pressed to remember even if he weren't cannon-blasted and befuddled. Besides, Ruin served just fine. Huge and bald and naked, he appeared for all the world like the fiercest thick ever to draw breath, his elven blood buried beneath a mountain of bulging muscle, charcoal skin, and savage, hell's-birthed strength. Teeth bared, Ruin spun, lobbing the gunstone back at the walls. The ball hurtled through the shadowed opening beneath the canvas that expelled it. Oates heard the impact, the screaming. The timber frame shattered, collapsing the shelter, silencing the screams. And the gun. Whirling, Ruin stooped. Oates thought the brute was moving to lift him, but the next instant he was shoved aside with such force he rolled free of the dead men. The guns continued to sound, thumping the air at irregular intervals. Ruin paid them no mind. He was too busy digging through the corpses, tossing them aside with increased aggravation. Oates struggled to get his legs under him. He'd only made it to his knees when Ruin issued a furious snarl, gave up on the dead, and darted to grab the front of Oates's brigand. Oates had lived his life at least a head taller than most, and now he was hauled up with the ease of a caught trout, boots dangling off the ground, as Ruin looked him in the eye. Any closer, and their noses would touch. Ruin shouted something, fast and angry, and in Elvish. Oates knew about three phrases of Tyne. He wished one of them could tell this monster to go fuck his own ass. Ruin shook him, repeated the question. This time, Oates caught something. Tatamiata. Twin. Or near enough to it in elf parlance. Of course he was looking for the chief. Oates could say one thing for Ruin. He was fucking constant. Oates kept his lips tight. He wouldn't utter a word about fetching to this hulking cunt. Ruin had hunted her once, though the chief now claimed it was out of curiosity rather than malice. But it turned ugly, and this giant son of a thick had nearly killed the entire hoof. Fetch stopped him, in the end, and they'd come to an understanding of a kind before Ruin left with the fangs of our fathers. But Oates wasn't about to wager on any standing peace. Not under this moon.
Kasiquana!
Ruin demanded, his breath hot.
Shout her pointier name all you want, Oates replied, as the sky strained against the whistle of gunstones. I'm not telling you.
The scowl on Ruin's slab-browed face deepened.
Tahanic!
Ruin's head turned at the shouting voice. There was another hurried string of Elvish. Oates craned to see a Tyne warrior riding toward them, the antlers of his harrow stag aglow with the same ghostly light imbued within the stone head of the club he bore. It was the chief's other brother, Oates realized, recognizing the black war paint covering the top half of his face. Bloodcrow. Starling's son. The elf reined up and threw a few heated words at Ruin, pausing to swing his club, unleashing a trilling wave of sound that scattered a flight of incoming thrumbolts. Ruin set Oates down and held on to his brigand long enough to ensure he was steady.
Your chief? Bloodcrow said, casting keen eyes about as if he expected Fetch would be close. Where is she?
Why? Oates returned, trying to ignore the fact that he was standing on a battlefield having a palaver with the Ruskin and an orc sorcerer, both kin to Fetching, while Kalbarka spat all manner of death at them.
My brother believes she is in peril, Bloodcrow replied, keeping his stag well in hand against the gun's tumult.
Oates pointed at the walls of the city.
We're all in peril!
Ruin's primal pit of a voice said something to Bloodcrow, even as a thrumbolt struck the brute in the shoulder and splintered against his flesh. Whatever he said caused the elf to turn his stag. Ruin cuffed Oates on the back, pushing him toward the hills. The savage stayed on his heels, using his bulk as a shield. They ran over swaths of dead, but it was the injured that made the field a hell to cross. The number of poor, wailing forms without feet, with legs reduced to twisted offal, brought Oates's guts to his throat.
Whatever mad fuck had conjured the notion of propelling a lead ball out of a bronze tube at such speed deserved to be torn apart by his own creation. Oates reckoned the men struck by thrumbolts were the fortunate ones, until he saw the man pierce through the cheek, the bolt angled so the broad head protruded between his jaw and neck. The transfixing shaft had wedged in the man's mouth, leaving it gaping, dribbling blood. Small, throttled noises pulsed from his stricken throat as he crawled on hands and knees. Oates could carry one man from the field. One. It was all he had the strength for, the time. He kept passing by, enduring the ignored pleas, hoping to spy the obvious choice, the man with a chance at living and not just another corpse dragging itself along because it hadn't yet realized its wounds were fatal. How many had he passed in his search who would have lived if he'd simply quit stalling and grabbed them up? A wordless sound came strangling out of him, the ugly child of a curse and a sob. He trudged to a stop, snatched up the nearest man, a man missing an arm, and continued on.
Magritta, bless you,
the bandit said, and went limp over his shoulder. Ahead, Bloodcrow sat his stag outside the range of the thrums and the guns. A few bandits had collapsed in ragged groups nearby, so defeated and blank-eyed that the appearance of the elf did not stir them. Most of their fellow survivors had continued on into the deeper safety of the foothills. Oates stomped to a halt and lowered the armless man among his slumped comrades.
"Tend him," he said, "or the martyred Madre will curse you."
Fucking fool-ass thing to say, especially now. Any belief they had in him lay butchered beneath Kalbarka's walls. But if the misguided faith of the hillmen could get hundreds of them killed, maybe it had enough blindness left to save one. As Oates plotted the last dozen steps to Bloodcrow's waiting stag, a hunchbacked shape prowled from the night and fell into step beside Ruin. Too big to be a dog, too ugly to be a wolf, Oates knew the slavering animal. It was the last of Ruin's pack of bewitched hyenas, the only one Jackal hadn't killed because it had been pinned to the earth by a javelin. Oates's javelin.
"You're welcome," he muttered at the unsightly cur. "You must take us to her," Bloodcrow declared.
His Hisparthan was accented, but considering he hadn't spoken a word of it since half a year ago, it was damn perfect.
"Gonna need more reason, Point Ear," Oates told him,
wagging a thumb between Bloodcrow and Ruin.
"The pair of you don't stoke much trust."
The Tyne warrior's proud face tightened with repressed ire.
"Whatever has drawn Tahunnik is capable of killing our sister."
"Drawn?" Oates said, sucking in air. He threw a grimace skyward.
"Then you knew this shit was coming."
Bloodcrow hardly glanced at the betrayer moon.
"Crazed centaurs cannot challenge Asilia Kaga Arku," he said, invoking the name for what the elves believed the chief and Ruin to be.
"Meaning it's fucking worse," Oates said, feeling very weary. Next to him, Ruin paced, impatient as a caged beast, his hyena bristling by his legs. He threw a heavy arm back at the battlefield and griped at his elven half-brother before directing a bitter look at Oates.
"Speak so I can understand," Oates barked in Orcish. "Tahunnik no longer dirties himself."